about everything, the beginning and the end. And from ancient times, things that are not yet done, in other words, prophecies that were made way back when, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. Calling a bird of prey from the east, the man who executes my counsel, and from a far country. Indeed, I have spoken it. I will also bring it to pass. I have purposed it. I will also do it. It doesn't get any more dogmatic than that. This is God declaring who and what he is. Whatever God says or purposes to do, it will happen. Whatever he wants to take place, it will take place. Whenever he wants to change, or if he wants to change his mind, he will change his mind. He is totally in control. He and he alone is in control. And this is an important point for us to learn, not just about prophecy, but about our own individual lives. Because there's a prophecy going on in each and every one of our lives, if you ever stop and think about it like that. Let me think aloud a little bit more as we go through this today. Let's turn over to Luke 21 now, back to the New Testament. Luke chapter 21. While you're turning to Luke 21, let me share some interesting statistics about the Earth's population. I found a fascinating website. It's called Worldometers, just like it sounds, Worldometers. On it, you can see the live, up-to-the-second updates of the world's population. It's ticking away. According to the site's count meter, as of Saturday today, March 2nd, 2019, at 12 noon p.m. Pacific time, the world's population was 7,687,622,000 and counting. The counter ticks off in the growth population of the entire Earth more than one a second, more than one a second. It increases at the rate of approximately 210,000 people per day, which is about a 1.07% annual growth rate for the year. So if you want to figure out how big the Earth is going to grow in 2019, take 7,687,622 and multiply it times 1.07, and you'll know how many more we're going to have. It's growing in just leaps and bounds. It's insane how fast the Earth is growing. The fastest growing nation on the earth, the one that's growing faster than anybody else right now, you might think is China, but it's India. The reason it's not China is multiple years ago, I forget how many decades ago, China had a one-birth policy. You weren't allowed to have more than one child, or you'd be penalized for it. They are now paying the price for that, because as their nation gets older, they have fewer younger people to fill the slots to be able to maintain the superstructure of their monolithic, and it's huge now. The biggest economy in the world right now is China. Interesting stats. And out of all these people, all these almost 7 billion people on the earth, what do you think is the number one cause of death? If you Google the top 10 causes of death in the world, you will get these. Number one, coronary heart disease, 8.7 million. Number two, stroke, 6.2 million. Number three, lower respiratory infections, 3.1 million. Four, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, 3.1 million. Five, trachea, bronchus, lung cancers, 1.7 million. Diabetes mellitus, 1.6 million. Alzheimer's disease and other dementias, 1.5 million. Diarrheal disease, 1.4 million. Tuberculosis, 1.4 million. And this is a disease that was declared exterminated a couple of decades ago. It's now one of the fastest growing diseases in the world. And number 10, road injury, 1.3 million. There's another website that also has a live counter system on it that you can turn to. It's called The World Counts. Fascinating website. And according to them, more than one person in the world dies of hunger every second. Every second. That equates to about 36 million people dying from this year from hunger. That's more than four times coronary heart disease. And it's not even listed as a cause of death by worldwide statistics. That's more than four times the number one listed on the cause of death and the coronary heart disease. They also state that right now, over 1 billion people in the world suffer from daily hunger. 1 billion. What's fascinating about that is the world is producing more food than 8 billion people could eat. You go figure that one out. And prophetically, this situation is only projected to get worse. We in America and most other developed countries don't even think about these statistics because we're not affected by it. Well, we actually are in this country. We got a lot of people dying of hunger in this country, but we don't talk about it. And this does not take into account the tyranny of dictators, wars, famine, drought, pestilence, and other natural disasters. I know it's not enjoyable or uplifting to think about this sort of thing, but it's what's real. And if we're going to talk about prophecy, one of the things we have to talk about is the bad stuff that goes along with the good stuff. Because the bad stuff is what many of us are going to have to get through to get to the end. And again, if we understand prophecy, it is only going to get worse. Let's look at Luke 21 and see what Jesus said about these times that we live in now. Let's begin in Luke 21 and verse 34. Luke 21, 34. He said, "But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing and drunkenness and cares of this life, and that day come upon you unexpectedly." And that's easy to happen. And it doesn't have to be with carousing. It doesn't have to be caused with drunkenness. Just day-to-day living can cause us to get off track and not think about this kind of thing. He goes on in verse 35, he said, "For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth." Nobody is going to be excluded with what is coming. "Watch therefore," he says in verse 36, "and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man." Listen to how the New Living Translation renders verse 36 again. "Keep alert at all times and pray that you might be strong enough to escape these coming horrors and stand before the Son of Man." This is a pretty strong warning by Jesus Christ himself. To watch, pay attention to what's going on, and to pray that you might be counted worthy to be able to escape some of this craziness that is going to go on in the earth. So what are these horrors that we might be wanting to avoid that Jesus Christ just talked about? Turn to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24. This is a chapter of the Bible that is definitely one of the most prophetic sections of Scripture in the entire Bible. I think during my years at Ambassador College, I turned to Matthew 24 more than any other chapter in the entire Bible. It is also not unlike the book of Revelation, linked with several other passages in the Bible, both Old and New Testament, that we will be going through very shortly. In chapter 23 of Matthew, Jesus had just given the scribes and Pharisees a pretty strong tongue-lashing and rebuke because of their behavior and their attitudes. He left the temple grounds and he came to the Mount of Olives and he started to talk to these individuals. He presents what has become known as the Olivet Prophecy here in Matthew 24. Let's pick it up in Matthew 24 and begin reading in verse 3. Matthew 24 and verse 3. "And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, 'Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?'" They are asking for the signs of his return and the end of this present age that they were in then. Because they were expecting that he was going to do something rather dramatically, rather quickly, as opposed to delay it 2,000 years or more. Not that he's delaying it, God Almighty is. So in verse 4, Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many." So one of the first things that they and we have to contend with is deception. Keep in mind, he's talking to his chosen disciples. These are his loyal comrades. These are the individuals that are going to carry on the church once he's gone. And what is he telling them? Be careful that no one deceives you. He said, because there's going to be many coming, preaching about me and telling you about all this and saying I'm the Christ, and they will be able to put on such a good presentation, talk with such smooth words, and with such convincing arguments that you can actually start leading people away. And we're going to find out that he's actually referring to the very elect, which is referring to us. And we really need to take this seriously if we are going to make it through all these things. It's going to be so powerful that Christ is warning us so that we can be on the lookout for it and be able to challenge it and to be able to know and understand what we truly believe and defend it in our own hearts and in our own minds. We'll see this amplified in a few moments later in the chapter. So what's next? Verse 6. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. So how many hot spots of wars do we have in the world today? I Googled that. There's over 700 battles going on the earth right now. In 15 countries right now, there are wars, and to be declared a true war by this one standard that they have on the internet, that means more than 1,000 people die every year as a result of this conflict. Okay? That's like 3 a day. That's considered a real war. 15 countries right now have that going on. More than 1,000 people a year dying in each one of these countries' conflicts. Syria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, the Congo, South Sudan, the Ukraine, Iraq, Israel and Palestine, Somali, India, Peru, Myanmar, Nigeria, Egypt, and Darfur, Africa. Those are declared full-out wars going on in the earth right now. Not to mention the tensions of North Korea and China, which are growing steadily. I don't know if I sent it to many of you. I think I sent it to a few of you. I got somebody that forwarded to me. It was a recruiting film for China's Navy. It's a 20-minute film. I thought it was a joke when somebody first sent it to me. And if you want to see it, I can forward it to you if you haven't seen it. It'll blow your mind. You would think it's a promotional field recruiting for the United States Navy. It is powerful. It's actually quite scary. China is doing everything in their power to control the seas of the earth because they want to control the shipping lanes. Because they have so much need for stuff going out and so much need for stuff coming in, and they want to control it all. Unlike other merchant marine ships around the world, which there's many of them for China, every single one of China's merchant marine ships are armed to the teeth like battleships, but they're not exposed. Another website called Wars in the World, they claim that 69 countries are in some form of war at the present time. 69 different countries. And they include 816 militias, guerrillas, separatists, terrorists, and anarchists. 816 groups in 69 countries. And we wonder why the world's in chaos. It's never ending. And it is not de-escalating, folks. It's escalating. Sometimes I think we forget it about stuff like this because it's not in our backyard yet. China wants to control the United States. It's part of their agenda. Europe wants to control the United States. It's in their agenda. I mean, they've literally stated this. Matthew 24, verse 7. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are just the beginnings of the sorrows. Some of this stuff's already going on. At what level does it have to get any worse to be fulfilling prophecy? And my friends, this has been going on in various degrees for many, many, many years. Then he addresses more personal issues for us to be aware of. Verse 9. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And with the Muslim uprising over the last decade or so, this is becoming a growing issue. Anywhere the Muslims go into a nation and establish a percentage of 2% or more, that's all they need. I just had an email texted to me this last week pointing out how many people we in this country have elected into key positions in governments around the country, local, state, and federal, that are Muslim, that we've never done before. This is intentional. This isn't by accident. What they do is they pick certain communities, they move as many people into those communities as they possibly can, they get them all registered to vote, and they all vote for the Muslims. There's three or four pockets around the country where this is really major. California is one of them. Michigan is another one. And I forget what the third state is where there's a third issue with that. And if you want to really check this out, go into the internet and Google Muslim occupation of Great Britain. It is a nightmare for them right now. And it is becoming so treacherous that everybody's afraid to say anything anywhere. Okay, verse 10. And then many will be offended. Duh. When have you ever known, especially in this country, people taking offense for everything? You can't say anything without being cautious about it. I just happened to turn on the TV today just to check something out, and for about 4 hours today, starting somewhere around 10 or 11 o'clock this morning, there was a press conference taking place with the district attorney for Sacramento because of the Stephon Clark case. Remember that? Where they were screaming and yelling that the police wrongfully killed this young black kid that didn't have a weapon. Well, they brought all the evidence, and because of all of this offense that's taking place and the uprising that we had going on and the chanting and the craziness that went on in this state and city a year or two ago, they had a four-hour press conference. When I was leaving to come to church, I turned it on again. It was still on, explaining all of the details to make sure that nobody could say that something was done wrong. Back to verse 10. And then many will be offended. They will betray one another and will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. See, this is a sequence of events that's taking place. All this offense stuff, that's already been happening. It seems like as things start to get worse is when the false prophets have more ears willing to listen. And it makes all the sense in the world if you stop and think about it. The more trauma mankind faces, the more they look for an escape or a savior, real or unreal. Anybody that will claim to help them get out of this nonsense and this mess. How do you think it's going to be possible for the beast power to come to power? Where one individual is going to have control over the entire earth. It's going to be because of stuff like this. And of course, Satan's going to help out with being able to do miracles and miraculous things and stuff going on and draw all the attention to the wrong source. In verse 12, and because lawlessness will abound and it's growing, the love of many will grow cold. People will just, loving one another is going to become absolutely unnecessary in most people's mind. It's going to be stark survival. He then points out that there's going to be a need to just get through it all by enduring to the end. the end of the age or the end of our lives, whichever comes first. Verse 13. But he who endures to the end, again, to the end of this age or to the end of our life, whichever comes first, will be saved. The word in the original Greek, I looked it up, is translated endures here. The Greek word is spelled in English, hupomeno. H-U-P-O-M-E-N-O, hupomeno. And it means this: to hold one's ground in conflict, bear up against adversity, hold out under stress, stand firm, persevere under pressure, wait calmly and courageously. It is not a passive resignation to fate or mere patience, but the active, energetic resistance to defeat, which then allows for calm and brave and endurance. In other words, not just sitting back cowardly, hoping and praying that something's going to happen, but being a strong, staunch, aggressive in our faith and our beliefs, moving forward positively. And then he goes on, and it sort of reminds me of the agape love approach to life, if you stop and think about it. Verse 14, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. And part of this endurance to the end that we just read about includes actively trying to preach the gospel of the kingdom of God as a witness to the world. God is, however, the only one who will know when this is completed. We as human beings will never know that answer. That's why we have to keep trying to do it. It's part of what Jesus Christ said as our marching orders as this world comes apart at the seams. Then he refers to another prophecy from the book of Daniel, verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, and then he's got this little parenthetical phrase, whoever reads, let him understand. If you want to put it in your notes, this is referring to Daniel 9, verse 27, Daniel 11, verse 31, and Daniel 12, verse 11. But I want to go back to the statement that he makes. Whoever reads, let him understand, is probably in reference to Daniel 9, verse 23, which we will address in the Revelation Bible study eventually. But keep in mind what Jesus Christ himself said. Whoever reads this, you better come to understand it. It can't just be a passive reading. And Jesus Christ didn't put any other quote like that anywhere in any preaching that he did. So this must be very important. Then some practical advice for those who live in the area when all this starts to break loose at the end time. Verse 16, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down and take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back and get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. He's getting pretty specific here. In other words, there's going to come a point in time where you just better get out of Dodge. If there's an escape route, take it. There's a way to get out from underneath all this carnage that you're seeing coming your way. Get out. Because it's going to get exponentially worse. And he's pointing out that it's going to become rather obvious when the time comes when you need to scoot. How much worse is it going to get? Let's read on. Verse 21, for then, after all of this, after everybody was able to get out that could get out, for then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. So what is he trying to tell us here? It's going to be as bad as it could possibly get. It's going to get really ugly, really nasty, really aggressive. And how do I know that? Verse 22. because unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days are be shortened. You talk about trauma? Christ is saying it's going to get so bad that if he doesn't intervene with the angels, every human being on this earth would be destroyed. He said no flesh would be saved. I can't even imagine what that's going to have to be like. And again, we're going to be talking about some of this stuff as we get into the study of the book of Revelation. The revelation that was given to John starts talking. He starts trying to articulate what he's being shown. And I don't know how God did this or Christ did this or the angel did it. Maybe they did something like we've got, you know, rewind on the DVD player. I don't know. But he saw something in some kind of a vision or video or whatever it was he saw, and he had to try to explain what was happening thousands of years down the road in terms of his present-day articulation. That's why we have so many of these analogies used in the book of Revelation that are hard to understand. We can think we figured them out. We probably don't know what all the details are. We'll get into that later. If God doesn't stop everything, man will annihilate all of mankind. Then more about the possible deception that we talked about a little bit earlier. Verse 23. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. It doesn't get any more straightforward than that, folks. Jesus Christ is giving this warning to us, as much as, if not more than, to them back then. You might want to put Mark 13:22 in your notes as well, which basically repeats this. And he goes on to verse 25. He says, see, I have told you beforehand. He's telling us that this deception is going to become so powerful that if we're not properly aware of what to be looking for, we could conceivably be deceived. Which is why it's so important to be aware of all that's going to take place. And he goes on in verse 26, he said, therefore, if they say to you, look, he is in the desert, do not go out. Or look, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. Christ is telling us that when he returns, it is going to be so obvious, nobody's going to have to tell you there he is. So anybody that presumes to make these kinds of statements, he said, just tell them, go fly a kite. Don't believe them. Don't believe any of that. I mean, I hearken all of us back to the Feast of Trumpets this last year, where we had two or three, four messages all talking about the power and the majesty of Jesus Christ when he returns to this earth. There's going to be no doubt in anybody's mind what's happening. It's not going to be in secret. It's not going to be quiet. And it's not going to be casual. It's going to be coming in full fury, full power. There will be no mistake about it. It's going to be that obvious. Verse 27. He said, for as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also be the coming of the Son of Man. In other words, powerful and very, very dramatic. For wherever the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered together. I think the New Living Translation helps with meaning of this verse. I'm going to reread verse 28. Just as the gathering of the vultures shows there is a carcass nearby, so these signs indicate that the end is near. That's what that verse is telling us. And how many times have you been driving, even around here? I mean, I go out and visit Dud and Louise Trone. I got to drive through those back roads and stuff, and you get by some of those open fields. Every once in a while, you'll see three or four turkey buzzards flying around up on top, circling slow. You know there's a carcass down there somewhere. They're just waiting for the right moment to go after it. That's what Jesus Christ is telling us right here in this passage of verse. Okay. Verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. It's going to be dramatic. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. Then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and with great glory. Again, it's going to be unmistaken what's happening. Just like we discussed this year at the Feast of Trumpets. Verse 31, and he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds and from one end of the heaven to the other. A gathering of all his elect. This is when the resurrection takes place. All those that died in the faith are going to come popping up out of the ground. All those that are alive when Jesus Christ returns are going to be changed, the twinkling and moment of an eye, as we read in Corinthians and Thessalonians. This is going to be a really exciting moment in time if we can get to the point. Getting to the point, I think, is going to be much more traumatic and much more difficult if we're all still alive. Drop down to verse 42. Verse 42, we'll see a passage similar to what we read in Luke 21 in the beginning. He said, verse 42, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. In other words, be vigilant about what's going on in our lives. Pay attention to it. Don't ignore it. Don't just blow it off. Start putting pieces of the puzzle together. He said in verse 44, he said, therefore you also be ready. If somebody said somebody's going to try to break into your house at midnight tonight, what would you do? Go to bed and forget about it? No, you'd be up at 11:30 or 11, checking all the doors, making sure all the doors are locked, turning off all the lights, making sure all the lights are turned off, make sure you've got a flashlight in your hand, make sure you've maybe got a baseball bat in your hand, something else. Make sure everything's battened down. And you would sit in a strategic position and you would just wait and you would pray. And you'd be ready for it, wouldn't you? You wouldn't just let it go and ignore it. This is what Jesus Christ is telling us about life. Lock the doors. Do everything you need to do. Get yourself settled. Pray about it, which is one of the things that Luke told us. Which is a statement that sort of throws all human reasoning out the window. If we ever get to the point where we think we've got all this figured out, like some have in years gone by. Remember this statement that we just read. The Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Why do you think he put that in there? Because of all the scholars that can figure all this stuff out, have this prophecy in line with this prophecy, in line with that prophecy, in line with this prophecy. I know it's going to be right around here. Nope. And everybody who's ever done that historically has been wrong, wrong, wrong. Other translations put this a little bit differently. They say the Son of Man will come when you least expect him. When you least expect him. Who do you think that's applied to? He's not talking to the world. He's not talking to unconverted minds. He's not talking to strangers out on the street. He's talking to his disciples. He's talking to the elect ones. When we least expect it is when he's going to come. Statement was made by Jesus Christ for a reason. This Olivet prophecy gives a summary and distinct sequence of events that will take place just before Jesus before Jesus Christ returns to set up his kingdom. There's going to be so many things happening when all this unfolds. It's probably going to become chaotic. Let me leave you with these three items to be specifically watchful for. One, the emergence of a powerful European superpower. Turn to Revelation 13. Revelation chapter 13. The dream of the European Union as a major economic trading bloc has pretty much come to fruition. Today, the EU is one of the most powerful groups of nations in terms of economic development and cooperation. Are they still having their troubles? Yes. But they're still powerful. Way more powerful than any one of those countries were independent of each other. Bible prophecy forecasts a transformation of this peaceful economic harmony that exists today to a powerful super union of states that will captivate and eventually rule the world. Look at Revelation 13, and let's begin in verse 3. Revelation 13, verse 3. And I saw one of its heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. Pretty dramatic stuff taking place right there. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. Who do you think is powering this dragon? Satan himself. And they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? It's because he's become so powerful that everybody on the earth is saying, there's nothing like this. Verse 5, and he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. That's 3.5 years. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. In other words, blaspheming everything that has to do with God and Jesus Christ. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Not a pretty sight. And authority was given over him over every tribe, every tongue, and every nation. This is a universal dictator that has the support of all the nations and all the armies of the world. All who dwell on the earth will worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Those are the only exceptions. But in verse 9, he says this, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. You need to pay attention to this, in other words. And we believe, when you combine this with some of the other scriptures, this superpower will indeed someday supplant the United States as the most powerful political, economic, and military power in the world. If it doesn't happen by this power, it'll probably happen by China. If it happens by China, this power will probably overtake China anyway. Stay in Revelation 13 for the next point. Number two. I'm only going to give you three. Rise of a powerful, influential church in Europe. History shows us that each powerful union of European nations, all through history from the time of Justinian to Napoleon, was accompanied by a church wielding influence with the power of life and death. It still exists, but it's not aggressive now. It's going to become empowered and extraordinarily aggressive. Bible prophecy confirms the record of history. The revival of the Roman Empire would be coupled with this religious fervor and deception, the likes of which the world has never seen. Revelation 13, 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth and had two horns, like a lamb, and spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell on it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound is healed. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. This is a very powerful influence. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and now lives. You might also add Daniel 7, verses 24 and 25. Daniel 7, verses 24 and 25. Verse 50, and he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. So they create this image of the beast, then he gives life to this image. This is the power of Satan being allowed by God to fulfill end-time prophecy. He gives breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and a mark on their foreheads, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Then this very interesting statement in verse 18. Here is wisdom. Remember that other statement Jesus Christ made back in Matthew 24? He who reads, let him understand. Talking about the abomination of desolation. Here's another profound statement. Here is wisdom, period. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666. What does that mean? I've never met anyone yet with the wisdom or understanding to calculate this. Many have tried, many have speculated, and identify this individual. I've met a few that thought they'd had it figured out, but they didn't. A couple of other scriptures you might want to put in your notes. I've already given you Daniel 7, verses 24 and 25. Also, the entire chapter of Revelation 17. As we look at this last prophetic item I will leave you with today, turn to the Old Testament, Zechariah 14. Zechariah 14. Okay, my last point to keep in mind as we watch is that we focus on the Middle East. I mentioned China earlier. China's been doing their best because they have a need now. They got way too many people to handle. they've got to increase their superstructure. So they're negotiating with all different kinds of countries. They're negotiating with Russia. They're negotiating with Brazil. They're negotiating with all different countries around the world. And anybody who's got power, they're going after. Anybody who's got finances, they're going after. But the focal point of everything that's going to take place during the end time is going to be focused on the Middle East. And that is going to be rather profound. Major political, religious, and military events in the Middle East. Zechariah 14 shows the triumphant and majestic return of Jesus Christ to the same Mount of Olives that we talked about earlier when he instructed his disciples of the future events until his return that we read about in Matthew 24. As we preached it, that's where he's going to come back and initiate it. Therefore, eventually, all eyes of the earth are going to be really focused on Jerusalem. Because that's going to be the focal point about where he comes back. Jesus does not return to the earth when it's in peace. Remember what we read in Matthew? If he didn't return and didn't intervene, there wouldn't be anybody left on the earth. Let's look at Zechariah 14 and begin in verse 1. Zechariah 14 and verse 1. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. And in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from the east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north, half of the mountain shall move toward the south. Then you shall flee through my valley, my mountain valley, for the mountain valley shall reach to Azel. Yes, you shall flee as you fled from the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Thus the Lord my God will come and all the saints with you. Drop down to verse 12. Now we'll see God's retaliation against these peoples, and it's not pretty. Zechariah 14, verse 12. And this shall be the plague with which the Lord will strike the people who fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh will dissolve while they stand on their feet. Has that ever happened in the past? Yeah, in World War II, it happened twice. Once in Hiroshima and once in Nagasaki. Those weapons that were used back in those two bombings are so infinitesimally small compared to what's available today that they use a weapon like that to trigger a nuclear device. And if you're anywhere near when that goes off, your flesh dissolves while you stand there on your feet. You just turn to liquid. And their eyes shall dissolve in their sockets, and their tongues shall dissolve in their mouths. It shall come to pass in that day that a great panic from the Lord will be among them. Everyone will seize the hand of his neighbor and raise his hand against his neighbor's hand. So we see the nations fighting Jesus at his return. In the meantime, significant events must occur between the modern state of Israel and the surrounding nations, which we're watching it happen all the time, which have been brewing for some time now. I can't remember a year in the last at least 20, maybe 30 or 40 or 50, maybe since 1948 when Israel was created as a nation, where there hasn't been conflict in and around Jerusalem somewhere. Let's go back to where we began today, to Luke chapter 21. Luke chapter 21. The Olivet prophecy that we reviewed in Matthew 24 and the 3 points that I gave you to keep your watchful eye on can help us be on a sure footing as we follow the events through the end of this age. But let's revisit Christ's admonition to watch and pray here in Matthew 21. As important as it is, understanding a prophetic timeline or sequence or events and distinction of the future will be of little value unless we also are evaluating our own personal lives as well. I hearken us back to our sermons on the agape love. Without that being extant in our lives, we can understand prophecy right down to the final point, and it'll be meaningless. Unless we are in that agape love mode in life. As we close today, let's read Luke 21 again, beginning in verse 34. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come upon you unexpectedly. We need to pay attention to our own spiritual lives through all of this. It is at the crux of our ability to make it. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Verse 36, watch therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass, and to stand before the Son of Man. That's what we all want. We know how we can get there. We just now have to put it in place. Have a great Sabbath.